Welcome back to Posting Through It. I'm your host, Jared Holt, back in the saddle again. It's a new year, which means it was time to open up the voicemail and text message inbox to take your questions, hear your comments, and turn the mic over to you all. It took me a while to get this one out because, frankly, it took a while for enough calls to come in. Thanks to everybody who called in, who sent a text message. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to getting to some of your questions and, you know, hopefully giving some answers.
Hey, Jared. I'm a Jewish guy from the congressional district next to George Santos's district. And I saw you were posting on Twitter commenting about people who were saying that the OK hand symbol that he did, you know, likely wasn't white supremacist in nature, that the context matters. And I happen to agree there that I doubt that for all the things that George Santos is and isn't, I don't think he was signaling to white supremacists, but I'm curious if you could expand and talk about how do we encourage people to recognize these more right-wing white supremacist subcultures and symbols so that they can point it out without maybe, I don't want to say getting carried away with it, but missing things because they're trying to find things too hard to be, you know, responsible to, they're trying to look out for these things, but, you know, sometimes they just get a little too far into the rabbit hole, with good intentions, but with maybe not the best outcomes. This is a whole jumbled message, but, I hope that you'll understand what I'm talking about. Thanks so much. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
It's a really good question. So what this caller was referring to was around, God, when was that? I've lost track of time with the pandemic and everything, but this was during the sort of battle for Kevin McCarthy to get Speaker of the House, you know, went through so many votes. And George Santos being a, you know, fresh member of Congress who was in the middle of all kinds of different media scandals, got up to cast his vote in support of McCarthy, threw his hand up in the air, and then under his hand, it looked like he made an OK sign. So thumb and index finger together, other three fingers splayed out. So this is a hand sign that was cataloged by places like the ADL, SPLC, as being a indicator that is sometimes used by white supremacist subcultures online to signal to each other. So after this happens, I believe it was an Associated Press photo of that moment starts going around, and various people are claiming, you know, aha, we've got him, you know, Scooby-Doo style. Here he is. He's a, you know, signaling to white supremacists, which I thought, you know, my commentary that this caller is referring to was to essentially argue that context is needed. Somebody like George Santos, who has been, you know, wrapped up in controversy after controversy for being dishonest about parts of his past, you know, gets called on it, still keeps lying, has not been, you know, placed into Elon Musk rocket ship and shot into space by his own party, despite all of that. You know, it's, you know, there's like plenty of things about George Santos, I guess is what I'm saying, that are bad. You can not like him for. I think it's pretty universal to not like liars. But the hand sign thing is, you know, I don't think anybody who called that out did so with bad intent. There's a lot of reasons to be skeptical of George Santos. But when it comes to the hand sign thing, you know, it really needs more context. To be an aggressive assertion. You know, you would want to look at people's memberships you know, in different or membership, or I guess I should say participation in different white supremacist subcultures, to be able to connect those two, or you would want to, you know, dig up some, you know, corroborating evidence before you make that allegation. But ultimately, the hand sign thing, it just needs like a lot more context. Making it on its own is, you know, not the smoking gun of, aha, he's aligned with white supremacist movements that some of the people that were commenting on it were trying to put forward. And I think it's really important, you know, even among people that mean well, to use caution on things like that. You know, I typically tell people that there are enough bad things in the world. There's enough bad things about people like George Santos that, you know, you don't need to look for secret clues. It happened a couple of years ago, too. The CPAC stage looked like an Odal rune, which is used by white supremacist groups when it was shot from above. And, you know, the same types of folks, same kind of people circulated that all around and said, aha, look, we got them now, boys. The CPAC, this god-awful conference that I've gone to too many of. Voila, we got them. You know, it's the world doesn't work like that. You know, we don't live in a Sherlock Holmes novel. So I guess to answer the question of, you know, how can we encourage people to be able to recognize that stuff, I think a lot of it has to do with education. You know, letting people know what these symbols are is one thing. And the fact that people recognize that as a potential symbol in its own way, I guess, is a little bit of a reason for hope. But there also has to be an education about the context of those symbols. So like every symbol that is used by white supremacists, every, you know, turn of phrase used by white supremacists and whatnot, you know, some are, of course, more obvious than others, but some need more context. And being, you know, I think part of that conversation is also, you know, really instilling in people, you know, what to look for. And also, you know, if you think you've found it, what it means to look for corroborating evidence. What are other things people could look for in that context to confirm what they may suspect? And as always, I definitely think if you are suspecting something or, you know, projecting or not projecting, what's the word? Speculating about something, it's always worth it to kind of punch the brakes or tap the brakes a little bit. And if you just have to post about it online and you have any kind of platform at all, really be clear when you are speculating. Instead of, you know, taking these kind of speculations or these assumptions and asserting them as fact, that is when things can kind of get out of control. And I do wonder, you know, if people are really focused on this hand sign, of course, people can walk and chew gum at the same time, but like, it's just like the bigger picture is more concerning. Like, for example, you could look at George Santos's congressional staff, and just in that cadre, there's enough reason to be concerned about his ties to the far right. So thanks for the question. I hope that answer helped. It was a bit long-winded, but I thought it was a great question. So thanks for asking it.
Hi, my name is Madison, and I'm from Oklahoma. Yesterday, I saw that you posted about a gentleman that's running for a local office in Enid, Oklahoma. And I am curious about how do you start, like, going in and being able to try to find some of these, like, Telegram channels or things like that. Where I live in Norman, I'm pretty certain some of our local city councilors and other officials are in some white supremacist groups. And I would really like to be able to try to figure that out and research it further. So thank you. I really enjoy your show.
Hey, thanks for the question. I think this is something that a lot of people wonder, people who see, you know, rising extremism and political violence in this country and, you know, don't want to just sit on the sidelines, but it can be hard to get started. So generally speaking, this is how I would approach it. And the story that this caller is referencing is one about a guy named Judson Blevins, who's running for local office in Oklahoma. I wrote an article when I was at Right Wing Watch, corroborating some tips that I got and doing some extra research to prove out that this guy was leading the Oklahoma state chapter of Identity Europa, which is a now defunct white nationalist group. So how I would approach this is I would think about, you know, what kind of groups are in play in your area? So, you know, looking through the headlines and the news, are there white supremacist groups that have made the news in your area? Or, you know, forget your area, maybe your state. Is there a chapter of something like Patriot Front in Oklahoma that people are aware of? Is there a White Lives Matter cluster in Oklahoma, for example? And getting a handle on the state landscape and starting to explore it on that level, I think, you know, generally speaking in my work, has given me ideas of where to look if I am more interested in a specific locale. So I would, you know, take measure of your state, what is known to be in your state. SPLC has resources for stuff like that. Also, you know, some of the larger groups, for better or worse, get press coverage. And you can kind of derive some stuff from that. And to some degree, you just have to let yourself fall down the rabbit hole. And I say that with a grain of salt. You know, chasing after white supremacists is not for everybody. Some people will feel more secure in doing that. It comes with a lot of vulnerabilities. They really don't like getting poked at, and can be a little vicious depending on the group. So, you know, before you go on that endeavor, I would also encourage you to sort of take stock of yourself and decide whether this is something that you feel, you know, you are capable of taking the risk of. I wouldn't recommend just anybody go chasing after this stuff. A lot of what you'll run into is very vile. And, you know, I already mentioned the personal risk that can be involved. So take that all in mind. And if you still decide that you want to do it, look at your state and then dig deeper. I'm going to go to a couple text messages that the call in line got. The first one here says, Jared, longtime fan. Sorry I like that reply where Travis View called you the B word. which I forgot about this. So I had to go look it up. I think what this person is referring to is the time that Travis View from the QAnon Anonymous podcast replied to me and said, get off this website and enjoy life, bitch. Now, my tweets personally are set to auto delete after 6 months, so I had to go back into the Wayback Machine archive service and see, you know, if by some shot in hell somebody had saved what his reply was to. And what it turned out is I was on vacation, and that was the day that Trump got COVID. I tweeted, I think I should have written it down, but something like, hell of a day to start a vacation. And in that case, I agree with Travis. I should have logged off. If I'm on vacation, who cares if Trump has COVID? Another text message. Jared, I think you are super cute and sexy, and this is not a joke. And your smile is really, really pretty. I'm a man, and I wish you were gay, but it's okay. Thank you. It's flattering, truly.
Hey, Jared, this is Logan from Seattle. I have a debate, one of the many unsettled debates with my brother about the origin of the chant, Let's Go Brandon, or rather origin of the motto that has found its way on the hats and jerseys and whatnot. You know, being this news spot for Brandon Brown, who was a racer at the Talladega Speedway. And my brother thinks that when the person interviewing Brandon said, oh, listen to that crowd, it's chanting, Let's Go Brandon, that she was lying, that she was knew what they were saying but had to hide it. And I think that doesn't make any sense. I think that she legitimately, for whatever reason, like couldn't hear them clearly and kind of did that thing where she fills in what she thinks they're saying, because that would make more sense to be chanting "Let's go, Brandon" in that moment. And wasn't lying, and also, but also asking Brandon to be complicit in this lie on the news show that she was obviously hearing "fuck Joe Biden," but you know, couldn't acknowledge that. I think that she legitimately just like couldn't hear it that well, and again, like just didn't think like that they're chanting that, because why on earth would people be in the wake of this win chanting a curse against the president or president-elect? Yeah, I guess that, no, he was the president at that point. Anyway, just thought you would comment on that. Thanks. Love the show.
So what this caller is referring to is the origin story of "Let's Go, Brandon." "Let's Go, Brandon," chanted at Trump rallies, at sporting events, on all kinds of merchandise. MAGA rappers have made songs about it. Some of them have actually sold a decent amount. So, the origin. As the caller notes, it came off of this clip from, I want to say it was like a NASCAR race, some kind of professional racing event. And they're interviewing the winner, again, as this caller notes, and the guy's name is Brandon something, and the crowd is chanting, you know, "F Joe Biden, fuck Joe Biden." And the interviewer says something to him like, "Oh, they're chanting, 'Let's go, Brandon.'" And, you know, I'll just play a clip, actually.
"Thank you so much, Jabs Construction. Thank you, Mid-Atlantic. Thank you to all of our partners. Oh my God, it's just such an unbelievable moment.
Brandon, you also told me, as you can hear the chants from the crowd, let's go, Brandon. Brandon, you told me you were going to kind of hang back those first two stages and just watch and learn. What did you learn that helped you there in those closing laps?"
"Oh my God, it was learning how each line..."
So I tend to side with you that I do believe that this was probably an accident or probably something that was misheard. It is the simplest explanation, which is usually what I trend towards. You know, a little bit of Occam's razor here in the mix over at Posting Through It. But, you know, I think it's really funny, the idea that, like, somehow, like, this reporter looked at this race car driver and was like, "Ooh, you know, we're in this together, right? We're going to say..." They said, "Let's go, Brandon," right? Because it is, like, so funny. And if I think of, like, places that are loud where you would potentially mishear something, a professional racetrack is pretty up there. It's a pretty darn loud place, full of concrete and, like, I'm sure weird reflections of sounds and, I mean, all kinds of stuff. You know, it just makes sense to me that this interviewer would have misheard it. And I think, you know, as funny as it is to think that there's, you know, the grand conspiracy to protect Joe Biden at the Speedway, I don't see it. I really do think this was an accident.
"Come back to Twitter, hippie. If we have to suffer through it, so do you. You aren't special."
What this caller is referring to, I think, is the fact that I'm really not using Twitter as much these days. I've written about this a few times in the newsletter, but when Elon took over, there was a lot of people kind of forecasting, like, aha, the site is doomed. It's all about to come crashing down. And the site has certainly not improved since Elon Musk bought it. It's glitchy, and I some of these, like, user interface design, I think it's called, choices, just don't make sense to me. I you know, it's not that like Elon Musk has exploded Twitter, but I do find Twitter, you know, severely less fun, I guess is what I'll say. So I use it less. I don't really miss it. I love you guys, the podcast listeners and the newsletter readers. That's like more than satisfying for me. Twitter's fun, but if it's not fun, I'm just not going to use it as much. And going to our last text message. Hey, Jared, this is Dan from Rockaway Beach, New York. And my question, quandary, is extremely long-winded and vain and egocentric, but also completely relevant to this moment. What a hell of a pitch. I was suspended from Twitter back in that I actually don't know how to say that word. Halcyon? Halcyon? I'm going to skip it. You got me. You got me, texter. I was suspended from Twitter back in the days of September 2020 for supposedly engaging in targeted harassment after encountering a MAGA fanatic who thought Martin Luther King Jr. was a capitalist. I didn't have a huge account, maybe 600 followers. After posting numerous links to speeches where King advocated for democratic socialism and providing links to National Review articles from the 60s that essentially called him a communist, this one particular goober kept denying historical record. At a point of complete content nausea and internet poisoning, I got frustrated and began adding colorful insults to my tweets. Long story short, I think I was brigaded and group reported, and I've been permanently suspended since. I appealed repeatedly and was denied repeatedly. All of this before the 2020 election occurred, mind you. Fast forward to November 2022. Elon Musk now owns Twitter and is offering amnesty to suspended accounts. So I appealed again, deliriously high on hopium, but was eventually dismayed after being rejected again. I've appealed a half dozen times since and have been rejected every time. I just gotta say, I love the way this is written. So rounding it out. So my question is this. After watching Laura Loomer and Roger Stone and Baked Alaska and Ollie Alexander and even Mr. Targeted Harassment himself, Donald F. and Trump, have their suspensions lifted, and watching prominent leftists get banned, Chad Loader in particular was doing critically important work, is it safe to assume that Elon Musk is censoring leftist voices while promoting far-right voices? So I guess first I should say, I'm sorry you haven't got your account back. I'm sure that's really frustrating, especially as all these like weird far right people come back to Twitter. You know, I don't know. I can't pretend to know why that might be. And I also would say that I don't have any proof that Elon Musk is censoring leftist voices. I mean, I know my personal stats on Twitter are lower than they've been in a long, long time. But I also use the site less, and, you know, I can't really be too surprised if I'm using the site less. Of course, people are engaging with my content less. And also engagement metrics, just like I don't care about that. Who I reach is much more important than how many people I reach. So what I will say, and what I think is obvious, frankly, is that Elon Musk is rolling out the red carpet for the nutcase right in a way that he is not even pretending to do for the left. Besides the Krasenstein bros and like a few lefty conspiracy nuts I can kind of think of, I can't really think of a lot of like big leftist accounts that got banned and have since returned. You know, conservatives would say, well, that's because leftists were never banned on Twitter, but that's not true. That's not true. And, you know, an account like that also might be out there. I'll just say that. I just don't know. I can't readily think of one. So promoting far-right voices, yes. We've seen him chattering with people like Andy Ngo, who I have very little doubt motivated the ban of Chad Loader and It's Going Down and other anti-fascist reporters and collectives that were doing good work against the far-right. But censoring the left? I'm not sure. I mean, I think the simplest explanation is probably that he just doesn't care. I mean, that's how I see it anyway. I hope you get your account back. I don't know that he is suppressing left-wing content. Hopefully not. But, you know, at the very least, I think it's totally safe to say that bringing back, you know, free speech in all forms was a big charade, and I feel sorry for anybody who fell for it. And I also just want to add that according to Twitter, not Elon Twitter, but the old Twitter, the amount of times your content is reported does not play a factor in the content moderation decision. Now, you can believe that or not, but for what it's worth, that's what Twitter has told people who have asked about this in the past. And this last call in the voicemail inbox, I gotta be honest, I'm just gonna let it play and let it end the episode, but I am not sure if it was a bit or a serious call. I think it was a bit. And I don't think that's any reflection on the caller here. I think it is just kind of a reflection of how just shot our political discourse is, that somebody calling in and talking about the dick vein on Snickers bars and M&Ms and whatnot. You know, it's, I think it's doing a bit, but like everything this caller mentions has been a conservative, quote unquote, culture war flashpoint that we were supposed to pretend to care about within the last year. So I'll just kick it over to that. Thanks again to everybody who called in. And, you know, I appreciate you listening to the show, you know, giving me a ring. Maybe I'll try to do this more than once a year going forward. But besides that, newsletters next week. I'll catch you then.
As I was saying before the call dropped, you hippies and commies are done ruining this country. You're done screwing up the culture. You know, no more ruining American Girl doll. That's another thing you screwed up. You know, no one asked for Consuela or Tanisha doll. It's American doll. You ruined M&Ms. I mean, you can't even leave the candy alone. You come for the M&Ms. You ruined that. No more dick veins in the Snickers bars. You ruined that. You're woke complaining. Woke complaining about everything. And who are you all to try to force books on kids anyway? I mean, this stuff with the story time is so ridiculous. No one asked any of you to force books on kids. Well, unless they're Dr. Seuss books. Dr. Seuss books, of course. The only thing I let my kids read. But the rest of the stuff, it's just liberal garbage. You won't leave this potato head in peace. You ruined that. But instead, I call to remind you and your hippie commie listeners, the Benghazi isn't going away. And neither is Hunter Biden's laptop, for that matter. So, yeah. Suck it up. We're going to take this country back, whether you hippies like it or not. And that's it.